What a morning. It's been good all the way around. One of the things that you'll be blessed to know, when I got up this morning and started looking through my notes, I realized I had about twice as much as I needed. I started cutting back. And what was going to be a one-time shot today is now a two-times shot. So we'll get the second half of it next week. Now, one of the problems is the takeaways sort of relate to both halves. So if you hear something of that at the end, you'll say, okay, that must go with next week, and hopefully it'll all tie together about that time. You know, it's interesting how God works on kind of the impulse that He gives me for speaking. One thing is often we'll get a topic, we'll stay in a series and go through that, and then we'll switch to something else. And then sometimes in between those, He'll just sort of throw in random things. Here, I want you to kind of focus on this, or He'll kind of give me a clue about something that I've heard during the week, and that becomes the focus. Well, I realized getting ready for this today, we're in a series, and I didn't know it. We dealt with some things last week that are going to filter right into this week, and you'll see how it all ties together. So it's just part of what it's like when God is in control of these things and we're not. So it's something very special. Now, let me ask you some questions. Say when you went in to get into your car this morning to come to church and you had a flat tire, is that a trial? You found out that the thing the doctor removed is cancerous. Is that a trial? You got a call from your bank and someone is representing you in Mexico City buying furniture. Is that a trial? You bent down to pick up the morning paper and couldn't straighten up. Is that a trial? Your daughter just called and your son-in-law lost his job. Is that a trial? Then she adds that the two of them, the six kids and four dogs and a parakeet, are going to move in. Is that a trial? Yeah, okay. So the question is, what's a trial? What is a trial? A trial is simply an event that causes a disruption to our lives. It's neutral. It's not out to get us. It's not targeted. It just happens. Things happen in life, and then we are faced with an opportunity or maybe a challenge. How are we going to respond to it? What are we going to do now that this has dropped in my lap? How am I going to deal with this thing? With what dropped in my lap was a trial, but how I deal with it is a test. It's a test to see what my response will be. And how I handle it then becomes that test. Here's the test. The test is an opportunity to see what choices I will make under certain stresses. Now, you know this about yourself. It's very easy to know this. You will act certain ways under certain conditions. But if those conditions change, you will act a different way in response to those stresses. It's natural. We do that. So a test is to see how are we going to operate once a trial has been dropped into our lap. A trial is neutral, cares nothing about the outcome. It really doesn't care what you do. You stub your toe. Trial doesn't care what you say, what you do. It's neutral to that. But the test comes in, is going to find out that there's an intentional purpose behind this for us. A test in this regard is not a, it's not based on a percentage success. It's a pass-fail. Either we pass or we fail. I remember in school, they would convince us that a 70 was okay. It's considered average, and it's acceptable to get a 70 in school. So we're kind of growing up with this idea that, you know, I don't have to be perfect. I can fail, you know, a portion of the time, and it averages out, and I'm okay. But what if you were tossing your grandson up into the air and you're catching him only 7 out of 10 times? Is that an acceptable way to play with your grandson? No. You see, we're conditioned to think that however we get through it, it's fine. But when it is a test and God is involved, God is looking at it from a different standpoint, a pass-fail. Now, Satan wants to influence us to fail the test, obviously. That's his role in life. What can I do to undermine this person and get them to fail the test? God is wanting, on the other side of that, for us to pass the test. So within each trial is an opportunity to go one of two ways. I can go toward a downfall by giving in to Satan's desires, or I can rise above that and find my success. And my response to the trial, to the test, determines the outcome. Now, during a trial, what Satan is going to do, he's going to target us at the point of our weakness. He's going to do that with temptation. He's going to come in and in some way try to impose on our mind a way that we ought to deal with this that kind of fits a pattern of what we're doing. His goal is to weaken our resolve to remain faithful to God. In other words, he's going to try to get us to sin in some way through a neutral event just called a trial. Open your Bible to James 1. James 1, there's a couple of places we're going to be looking at this morning, but the first one is going to be in verse 13. Here's what James says. Let no one say when he is tempted, I'm being tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted with evil, and he himself does not tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when he's carried away and enticed by his own lust or his own compulsions. You see, the word enticed there actually means lure. If you're a fisherman, you know that there are certain things that fish will like, certain colors, certain images, certain shapes, certain smells. They'll be drawn to those things. And so you create a lure that would attract a fish according to his natural compulsions and hopefully lure him or draw him to you so you can capture him. That's what James says Satan does. Satan is enticing us, throwing out a lure that has a companion desire in our heart for what he's throwing out. It's not something that he would make up to try to find a new way to entice us. He just used the old stuff, the things that have worked throughout the past to be able to bring us in. And we know that his objective is to kill, steal, and destroy. But Jesus one day told Peter, Peter, let me tell you what Satan is trying to do in your life. It's in Luke 22. Listen to this. Simon, Simon, behold, Satan has demanded permission to sift you like wheat. But I prayed for you that your faith may not fail. And you, when you have turned again, strengthen your brothers. Now, keep that. Let me move out to the margin over here and talk about something that he just said. You realize Jesus said to Peter, Peter, I have prayed for you. Now, in my mind, that would mean guaranteed success. But what Jesus was praying that his faith would not fail, meaning, Peter, you're going to have the equipment you need to get through this. But then he says on the other side of that, he says, but here's what I know. You're going to fail the test. After you've failed and get restored, then you help your brothers. Now, Jesus, knowing that he was going to fail, gave him the encouragement he needed to do something with that failure, which was go to your brothers and admit to them, man, I blew it. I was trying to do this in my own strength. I blew it. Now, look at the consequences of that. You guys don't do that. Trying to help them learn from his mistake. But that's the duration of that. What Satan was trying to do in sifting Peter like wheat, by tempting Peter in an area where he is prone to defeat, Peter made an easy target of himself because of his arrogance, aggressiveness, and explosive personality. All Satan had to do was suggest, Peter, just act like Peter. Just deal with this like you would naturally deal with something you didn't like. Because he knew there were compulsions inside Peter that would have unguarded drawn him right into sin against God. He knew it. So he was just simply saying, Peter, let's go toward your tendencies and do that. So during our trial, here's a question. Do we give Satan an easy target? You know, we all have tendencies. There are some things that I have tendencies toward you don't have. Some things that you have tendencies toward that I don't have. Some things are a temptation to you. Don't bother me at all. Some things are temptations to me that you have no idea about in your own life. We have our own world that what are our compulsions? What drives me on the inside? And what he basically is saying is, am I giving Satan an easy target to hit those compulsions and drive me to sin against God. That's the policy, the procedure of what's going. What happens? Satan starts poking us in that sensitive area where we struggle, encouraging an unguarded response, cussing out the paper boy for throwing the paper in the roses, panicking when the doctor suggests that I have a serious problem, having a meltdown when we crash through the gate at Bentwater, maybe in the past. Trials are neutral. The trial is not the problem. The trial is just the trial. It's not out to get us. It just simply is something that happened. But it presents a test. How are we going to deal with it? How are we going to make it through with that thing in our lives? Sometimes they're just an intrusion in our lives, like an inconvenience. Sometimes they're life-threatening, no question. But regardless of how intense they are, Satan will use that test, that trial, to defeat us. And God, at the same time, will use it to bless us and bring us back the other way. Because, you see, God uses trials just like Satan does, except the opposite side of that coin. The coin being the trial, the face on one side is Satan encouraging us to go to defeat. The other side of the coin is God encouraging us for opportunities of growth. In fact, it says, for God, they create an opportunity for us to demonstrate faith by trusting Him, and He uses those trials to help us grow. Look at James, where you're there. James 1, verse 2. Consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance. And let endurance have its perfect result, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. See, God is going to use this trial to give us a faith exercise to help create endurance. Endurance is the strengthening of our trust muscles to help us better depend upon Him. And regardless of the severity of the trial, it can be stubbing my toe, but God wants me to not react so spontaneously to pain that I'm going in some way give a false testimony about how good He is. A flat tire isn't a big deal, but it can bring out our ugly side. A personality clash isn't a big deal, but unchecked, it can destroy friendships. A bad result from a medical test can be a big deal, but it doesn't have to ruin our lives. It's just an event. It's just a trial. How are we going to deal with it? How are we going to go through the test that comes? God doesn't plan everything that happens. But in everything that happens, God has a plan. I had a pastor share that years and years ago, and that my first reaction was, no, we have a sovereign God. He plans everything, down to the minute details, everything. And then I lived a little bit longer and read my Bible a little bit more and found out, wait a minute, stuff happens. And it can't be that God is orchestrating me stubbing my toe just to see how I'm going to react to that. There's got to be more to what God is involved in than the incidental, non-essential events and occurrences of my day. So what I came to is this thought, that it's not a fact that God is planning these, but when they happen, God has a plan for how I can respond and react accordingly. Jeremiah said it. Jeremiah 29:11, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans for welfare, not for calamity, to give you a future and a hope. Then you'll call on me and come to me and pray to me, and I will listen to you. You'll seek me and find me when you search for me with all your heart." You see, it's a plan that God has to get us through the trial. I can count on that. I can know that when the trial comes, God is also at the same time bringing His plan and ready, having that plan ready for me to respond, to choose that. It doesn't mean you're to fold your hands and say, "Verily, verily," you know, when you drop a hammer on your toe, wow, wasn't that something? No, we're going to feel pain, and we're going to go through emotional hurts, and we're going to find ourselves in a spiritual distraction of what's going on. It's the suddenness of the trial, maybe physically, emotionally, and spiritually, that is going to catch us off guard. But as soon as it catches us, we have to realize, wait a minute, I've I've got a way that I can respond. You know, I don't know if you do this or have done this, but I've also always kind of thought how I would like to go out at the end of my life. And I've decided I would like to go out in my sleep like my grandfather did. Not screaming in the back of the car like the other people did as they careened off the bridge into the... No, that's okay. It is a matter of us being able to respond in a way that demonstrates we have confidence that God's got a handle on this thing. I looked this up. It's been quoted that everybody in the past has made this statement. And maybe they did, but Tolstoy originally made this statement. So write this down if you're wondering. Very simple. We cannot prevent birds from flying over our heads, but we can keep them from making a nest in our hair. Similarly, bad thoughts sometimes appear in our mind, but we can choose whether we allow them to live there, to create a nest for themselves, and to breed evil deeds. Trials. You can't stop them. You can't go out and say, okay, I'm not going to have a trial today, because you have no control over trials. They're going to come in a variety of ways, but they're going to come. What are you going to do about it? How are you going to deal with it? How is it going to be your next step? And as soon as that trial lands in your lap, what's next for you? How are you going to deal with those things? You know, in times that you've flown, you have to sit through the flight preparation, either a video or a person talking to you. And one of the things that they say on there is kind of right about in the middle. It said, if the cabin loses pressure, out of this compartment will drop a little mask. Take the mask and put it on your face and pull the strap behind and breathe normally. If that thing's coming out at me from above my face, I think what I'm going to do, I'm going to scream till all the oxygen has gone out of my lungs, and then I'm going to grab that thing and try to start breathing from there. Some things are just going to grab hold of us, and they're going to have such a shocking effect that we're going to face this moment of despair. I don't know what to do. Desperation. What am I going to do? Well, what then comes is for us to trust God's plan. It won't take the emotion out of it. It won't make the pain go away. It won't be able to instantly take me out of the trial. But it will be a confidence that I have that I can get through the trial because I am trusting in what God has told me. There are trials that happen just because things happen. Within that trial comes the test. The test is how I will respond. Satan is going to use that test to try to tempt me to somehow act inappropriately in response to that test and sin against God. God at the same time is going to use that trial to build us up, providing an opportunity to trust Him. So, how do we respond to that? Go back to last week. We commit our works and our ways to the Lord by rolling the burden of that trial over onto the Lord. See, it's the same answer. From last week, we learned this word roll, and we learned this word commit, and all of this fit together as a way that we are to deal with our works and our ways. Well, this is when we use them. When a trial drops into our lap, that's the time to use what we know we're supposed to do. Oh, I roll my burden over onto the Lord. I roll my concern over onto the Lord. I roll my pain over onto the Lord. I roll my fear over onto the Lord. That's when we do that. When a trial drops into our lap, our response is to roll that over. So there are trials that produce tests. Now there are also tests that produce trials. Now if you're familiar with the story of Job, you're going to remember that the whole story of Job starts from a test that turned into a trial for Job. The test was the opportunity of Satan to try to dismantle Job's faith and have him curse God. At the same time, God was going to say, okay, you do that. My strategy is I'm going to undergird him and I'm going to come back and bless him at the end of this. So what started for Job as a test turned into a trial that then became again a test. It's just a means by which we understand. Sometimes they can come directly at us. Typically, a trial doesn't care. It's just an event that happens. But when a test starts the trial, it often is targeted and comes in for a specific benefit. When an area of our life needs some specific work, God may orchestrate circumstances that allow us to focus on that event. God looks at my life and says, you know, there's some areas of your life that need a little tweaking, need some adjustment there. For example, you don't listen to your wife. And I argue that I do. And so God says, let's turn up the heat on Carrie's life and let's see. So one day Jan came in to the living room and I must say a little frazzled, yelling at me, and said, you have not heard a single word I have been saying for the last 15 minutes. And I thought, that's a strange way to start a conversation. I don't listen. Guys, because your rib hurts just a little bit right now, you don't either. It's a tendency we have. So whenever that becomes a problem, God may turn the heat up there and point at that specific area of our life and say, we need to work on that. Oh, it could be any other number of things that God may choose to work at. But it basically is His response to an area of our life that needs specific intention, specific work. Now, let me go back into Job. If Job is a friend of yours, don't be offended by what I'm going to say right now, because I see Job differently than how many people may see him. Job was a good man, but he had a place within his heart that made him think God owed him for how good he is. And he was very serious about protecting that place and maintaining that. You see, the story of Job isn't about how to suffer. It doesn't teach patience, other than the fact that Job didn't kill his friends for their comments or for neglecting his pain. It isn't a textbook on how to deal with difficult times. It's a story of a man who is suffering and he wants to know why and can't figure it out. And so his friends come in and they give him their input as to what they think the problem is and what he ought to do about it. And it's a discussion, at times an argument, between those two thoughts. Job's ideas, these guys' ideas, and where this thing resolves it toward the end. Next week, we will get into that and flesh all of that out. But what makes it such an important book for us is that it asks us a question that we have to answer. What's our source for finding out what's going on in our own lives? Where are we going to go to get answers to know when we're suffering, what do we do next? What's going to be the direction that we're going to go when we face difficult things? Where are we going to find out? Who are we going to ask? What does this mean? If you've ever gone through difficult times, you may be going through them right now. What you'll find is there are basically two sources of struggle in your life. There is a downward tug, and there is a pulling uplift. If you remember back in days of being in school, kids on the playground, occasionally you might get pushed down. Or if somebody's bullying you, they'll push you down. Why? Well, sometimes it's just because they're being a kid. Sometimes they just don't want you to be on the same level they're on and they push you down. You know how that feels. Or maybe in work life or in a family life, somebody has tried to demean you because they don't want you equal to them in some way, and they've had to put you in your place. You know how that feels. It is a tugging from the downside. It's pulling us down, and you know what that feels like. But at the same time, if you've ever had somebody come by and say, hey, let me help you up, and you take their hand and they lift you up off the ground, you know how that feels as well. Or if somebody comes in knowing you just got blasted by somebody that was trying to put you in your place and they put their arm around you, you know what that feels like as well. Well, whenever a test comes as a result of a trial or it is a targeted thing that's coming after us, if we feel within that we're being pulled down, we know it's Satan's attack. Because he can't attack us from the top up. He can only attack from the bottom. And he's pulling us down to make us feel the misery of all that we're going through. Whatever on the other side of that, we sense that there is some force, there's some power, there's someone who's trying to lift me up in the midst of a trial. We know that's God. I've gone through the last couple of weeks in a variety of different ways, have had a conversation in my mind about I hear God, but I also hear this other voice. Why is this other voice telling me not to go with that voice? That other voice was Satan trying to disrupt God's plans in my life. And I've begun to hear those in such a way that I know when they're taking me down in a way, it's not God. God's always lifting and pulling me up. So the first thing that we do when we find ourselves in a trial caused by happenstance, or it is a targeted thing from a test, either way, the first thing we do, we honestly roll that off of ourselves onto Him. Because, see, I don't have enough information yet. I don't have wisdom yet. So I say, God, here is this problem I don't know what to do with. I roll that off onto You. And if it turns out just to be a trial, ordinary to life, I'm being given opportunities to be faithful, I've handled it. I submitted it to God. If it is a test that's specifically designed by Satan to destroy me or by God to build me up, I've done the same thing. I've rolled it over on Him. So just in simple terms, you don't have to spend your time trying to figure out, is this a test from the Lord or a temptation from Satan? Is this a trial that I'm just going through because I was standing in the wrong place at the wrong time? Or is this something targeted at fixing a problem in my life? I don't have to go through the argument of trying to figure out what it is. My job is to roll it over onto Him. If I roll it over onto Him, I have the confidence that that plan that He's got in mind is going to go into play in my life. Either way, our approach is the same, and here's the statement. Commit your life issues, your works, and your ways to the Lord, rolling the burden of the trial or test over to Him. And what you will leave with is a confidence. I believe God holds the answer for whatever I face. It doesn't matter what we face. It's the same answer. Give it to the Lord. Let Him get us through it. Here's our takeaways. A couple of these will make more sense next week. Number one, trusting God without reservation is a challenge. How we are conditioned to deal with our problems often fights against trusting. A drowning man cannot be saved until he quits fighting to save himself and submits to His rescue. When we submit to God, He changes us, our circumstances, or both. But as long as we trust in our own opinions rather than seek the wisdom of God, we will never find the answers that turn the trial or test into the blessing. That's going to be the message next week. So you be back, okay? Father, thank You for this day and the things that You've shown us that we needed to see about ourselves, the things that we needed to see about You. Lord, even some things we needed to know about Satan, what he's trying to do to undermine our confidence to trust in You. Lord, thank You that the answer is the same in all of these, for us to give our trials and our tests to You and trust that You have a plan to get us through them. Lord, it is not simplistic, but it is that simple. And Father, give us the courage to place that kind of confidence in You. Father, thank You for reminding us of these things. And Lord, I know there may be some going through things harder than I could even comprehend this morning. Struggles with family situations, with health issues. Father, with marriages. Lord, there's things that's going on in the lives of our folks that You're the only answer for them. So, Father, may they hear that message today and trust in You with all their hearts. And lean not on their own understanding, but in all of their ways, acknowledge You and let You direct their path. Thank You, Lord, for this day. In Jesus' name, amen.